Welcome, 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 everybody, to the latest edition of Minds of Markets podcast. This is going to be so amazing. Normally, you know, we'll talk to someone in the trading industry, finance. This one, we're stepping out of the box a little bit, still very much related to finance and the economy. This person that I am presenting today and honored to have on our podcast, I have known him personally. It's probably 30 years when you were just a very young whippersnapper.
What did that make you at that point? Yeah.
Exactly. As was I maybe at that point.
That's right.
And like I said, we're going to step outside the box a little bit today because there's so much talk. You can't turn on a financial network or even, you know, Fox, CNN, whatever it is, without seeing what's going on in the economy and what is happening to consumer spending, especially on the higher end. So that's what we're going to dive into today. And my guest is Matthew Burdeen, who is a pivotal figure in the luxury jewelry industry. He represents the second generation of leadership at Burdeen's Jewelry, which was founded by his parents in 1980. Matthew and his wife, Radha, who is a wonderful, wonderful person, purchased the business from his parents in 2010 and has expanded the family business into a premier destination for luxury jewelry and timepieces. Under their leadership, Burdeen's Jewelry has grown into one of the nation's largest independent jewelry stores. They have 5 Chicago locations, and I think, Matt, you're sitting in your brand new one right now, which you can tell us about, and one of the largest collections of pre-owned watches in the country. Today, Matt continues to drive the business forward, embodying the values of quality, innovation, and excellence that have been the cornerstone of the Burdeen's legacy. And I know it personally. I have seen it personally. Matt, I am so pleased, blessed, thankful that you are here today. You are, besides just so respected in your industry, you are a very, very close friend of mine. I'm just so glad you're here. And I want to just, you know, I want to hear the story of how you built the business back from the, you know, kind of little store that you guys had in Buffalo Grove, Illinois, way, way back into just this monster of a business and how you're navigating it through the economic challenges that people are seeing right now. And then also we're going to touch on what you give back to the community, because I know that that is a huge part of what you and Radha do. So let's dive in. Let's hear how you took this from, you know, the nice little jewelry store that you guys had and just built this into a behemoth.
Well, first, thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be here with you. You know, the Bauer family has been a very important part of my family's journey and our success. They were an early adopter of Burdeen's, their entire family. And those of you who don't know Scott, he's one of the most loyal individuals on the planet. I think that's something that he instills in his boys. And that's something that's a part of the Bauer family. So very happy to be here. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So my dad was an electrician. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And at around 35, he was just very upset with his life and his boss and everything else. So they decided to do something a little unconventional. They've always liked jewelry. So they started stringing beads and going to the mall and selling their wares in the mall. So they would string a bead bracelet, you know, for $5 and sell it for $15. And at the end of the weekend, they had $500 in their pocket. That was more than what my dad was making as an electrician. So he was thrilled with that whole concept. From that, you know, the simple cornerstones of business. You know, somebody without a college degree, somebody without a business degree, you make a dollar, you put 75 cents back in. So they would take that $500, they'd take $400 and buy other jewelry. And the business very slowly and organically started to grow out of our small house in Buffalo Grove. So I remember in the early 80s, my dad had a Blazer. He sold it to buy the sign for the front of the store, the one that you used to visit in Buffalo Grove in the strip mall next to the grocery store.
Yep.
And And at that point, I was about 14 years old, and I was watching all this unfold. I always loved sales, and I was always entrepreneurial, and this was fascinating to me. So I went to U of I for about a minute, thought I wanted to be a veterinarian. And you know, my parents said, hey, business is great. You should come home and help us out. So I dropped out after freshman year and came home to start the family business with them. So at that point, it was me and my mom and my dad. And we were in a strip mall in Buffalo Grove. Fast forward a little bit, you know, maybe 10 years after that, learning the business, learning how to build relationships and a little bit about the market. I remember it was Christmas time. And I'm looking over this case of gold earrings. I don't know if you remember, but we had these huge cases full of, you know, $200, $300 items. And I remember this old lady's in front of me, and she has her glasses down like this, and she's looking at the earrings. Can I see these? Can I see those? There's 20 people in the store. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm a really good sales guy. And I'm spending an hour with this woman selling a pair of $300 earrings. You know, my time could be used a lot better. So I wanted to start to scale the business up with higher end, with more luxury, less sales, you know, but more important sales. And at that time, my parents weren't that interested. They were happy with kind of what they had. So we made a deal, a future deal, and within the next 5 years for me to buy them out and start to continue to run the business the way that I wanted to run it. So that was about 15 years ago. My wife has a business degree from WashU in St. Louis. And she quit her corporate job to come help me grow the business. And the advantage that I have is I have all these wonderful people in my life, like you, like CEOs of all these major Fortune 500 companies that are around us. And that's how I got my MBA. So if I had a question, I would call the CEO of Walgreens or the CFO of Baxter, who are clients and who I knew personally, and say, hey, what do you think about this? Or how do I do that? And people are so generous if you just ask them sometimes. So these people held my hand and walked me through how to read an income statement, you know, what a bank's looking for if you want a loan. And that's how we started to grow.
I bet that most youngsters, young people would love to have that sort of education and get, as you just described, their MBA or advanced degree by real on-the-job training. You can't beat it. You just can't beat it. And what's amazing to me, though, Matt, is as I've seen your business grow and grow and grow, that without the formal education, that the business side of what you do has just, you know, it has just flourished. It has just killed it. But at the same time, because of who you are, because of who Rada is, you remember your roots. So you just told, you know, the story of that you were helping this elder lady, you know, on a $300 pair of earrings, and you'd sat there for an hour with her. I know personally that's how you guys still conduct business. You take every single client of yours, whether they're coming in to spend $100, which I'm not so sure there's anything in the store to buy for $100, or they're spending $100,000, and you treat them the exact same way. And from the outside, that has to be part of the success of what you guys have been able to do.
Thank you. Well, that purchase is no less important, you know, and that's something that as we scale, and that's something that I really talk to the salespeople about when I go through all of our stores. How the guy who saved up to buy a watch for $2,500 or a piece of jewelry for his wife for $2,500, that's just as important as the guy spending $250,000. That's just as much money to that guy, and that experience should be the same. So you know, that's something we never lose sight of, because we're selling luxury and everything we, you know, nobody needs anything we have. Everything we have is special. Everything we have is a luxury. So for somebody to come in, I feel honored that they're coming in to share that with me.
So I've got to transition this now to what's going on in the world, what's going on in the economy. Okay. You're expanding. Okay. So many other businesses, especially in the luxury industry, are laying people off. They're closing doors. What is going on? What has, you know, separated you from, and I'll get into some of the other luxury retailers and things like that in a little bit. But how have you made this? How are you continuing to expand, continuing on, again, the luxury level of things when we know that, you know, Main Street is not doing so great out there economically. We know that there is a wealth gap. There's no question about it. The top, you know, a lot of people say 1%. I call it 5 to 10%. You know, the top 5 to 10% of wealthy individuals are typically account for 75 to 80% of commerce out there. But even so, how are you still expanding in this environment?
I'm sitting on Oak Street now at our newest location. If you take a look at Oak Street, it's leased out. You know, I mean, all of these high-end luxury retailers have made significant investments. So I think, like a lot of the economy, you see a stratification of high luxury, you know, and then whatever you would call the bottom part of the market, value, I guess, or, you know, budget-minded consumer. But everybody wants a piece of high luxury. Every kid now knows brands. You know, I don't think when we were kids, you know what an Hermes purse was, or did you know what designer clothes were? You didn't have an idea of that stuff.
I think the hot thing for me when I was a teenager was the alligator, the Lacoste or Izod.
That was about
the extent of it.
That's it. And if you ask any kid now, especially young ladies, they know every single high end brand. You know, they know what luxury is. They're familiar with luxury. So I think how I've modeled our luxury brand is I understand that you need to give somebody an experience. You know, it's not just about coming to a brick and mortar store anymore. Shopping online is easy. And we offer, you know, a fantastic website and online service as well. And the e-com part of our business has grown significantly too. But if you're going to come into a store, I have to invest in that store. And I have to make it so you want to be in there and you want to spend time there. So what separates us, I think, from some of the really big luxury brands like Chanel or Hermes, when you walk in, they're not that interested in you, if you've noticed that. You know, that the experience you get from the sales associate is not what you deserve it to be. The experience architecturally of the brand and the build out is beautiful, but sometimes the personal experience isn't so great. So we have to make sure that we are on point with that personal experience. And we also give you a reason to come in and hang out at our stores.
So this is a great transition because I was just reading literally this morning. I was trying to you know, get some equivalent luxury brands out there and what's going on. So LVMH, who owns Christian Dior, Fendi, Givenchy, if I just spelled that right. I've never...
Givenchy.
Thank you. They
Louis Vuitton, yeah, Moet yes. Hennessy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So they reported that their most recent earnings, terrible. Their sales are kind of fizzling out after years of growth. And consumer spending on luxury items, and certainly everything you sell is a luxury item, has declined across the board as inflation, even though inflation is coming down a little bit, that's eaten into people's paychecks. Is it just this separation that you've made this so personal for people?
Well, they've had years of tremendous growth.
Sure.
And so did, I mean, the last couple of years, you know, I called the good old days. You know, we people had pockets full of cash that they were throwing around. And, you know, if you compare their sales this year to probably 3 years ago, they're still exponentially higher. But if you compared them to last to 21, you know, if you compared 22 to 23, you would see a decline. You know, we also experienced softness in 23 compared to 22. We anticipated that. You know, there was just a tremendous, tremendous demand in 22 that I don't think that I'll ever see again in my lifetime.
Right. Built up from the pandemic and people not going out and spending and yep.
And there's, you know, the thing about luxury goods is they can only make so much. They're made by hand. So there was this, you know, huge market demand on luxury goods and the supply wasn't there. And, you know, that created all this excitement and irrational exuberance around our whole luxury industry. So we had watches that would normally sell for, $15,000-$20,000 selling for $50,000.
Supply and demand, man. It's the bottom.
That's it.
You know, it's the end all be all of economic, you know, how the economy works and how the world works. The more demand there is, the higher the price is going to be. End of story, regardless
sure.
of what the commodity sure. or the item is. What's unbelievable, I was reading another stat, and I have to think that most of your clientele, or at least a good, you know, portion of your clientele, is probably the millennials, not the Gen Zers. I would guess, correct me if I'm wrong.
You're correct.
Okay. So there's something out there right now, though, that millennials and Gen Zers are out there are maxing out credit cards. They're buying luxury goods, but they're, you know, the buy now, pay later phenomenon, it has created this massive amount of debt, record amounts of debt for consumers in the United States. And personally, I think, you know, down the road here, and I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news. Personally, I think that's going to come home to roost for these Gen Zers. But on the millennial side, your type of client, are these the same type of people that, you know, given what's happening with housing over the last couple of years, it doesn't really affect them because they don't care about a mortgage that's gone from 3% to 8%. They're paying cash anyway.
So two things I always say is there's always rich people. You know, there's always the rich, there's always the poor, but there's always rich people. Sometimes they're the traders, sometimes they're the realtors, you know, but there's always somebody at the top, and that's the client that we're appealing to. So even when the broader economy is down, there's always somebody, it seems, that is benefiting, you know, from the, I'm sure it's like your business, you're making money on puts and calls. You know, and I think
nice
I think
reference.
It's the same way. Yeah, there
nice
you go.
Like
it's kind of the same thing as that economy goes down. There's people that are entrepreneurial people who are finding a way to make money while it goes down. And there's people, it's just easier to make money when the way it goes up. So I started a different business about 7 years ago where I do collateralized lending to high net worth people and jewelers. I don't know if you knew that.
I actually did not know that.
Yeah, so it that money crunch is something that we could take advantage of by understanding luxury collateral. So I take anything from I've taken $500,000 Hermes purses before to watches, art, bullion, taken planes before, you know, things that a bank wouldn't go for, and we collateralize that into a loan.
Almost, if I'm off base here, please correct me. Is this almost like a luxury pawn shop type of?
It's exactly what it is.
Okay.
It's exactly what it is. You know, it's just the way that the kind of assets that we're taking at the level we're taking them and the way that the clients are kind of treated, the rates are lower. It's a higher end product, but it is a luxury pawn, you know, and probably 50% of it is B2B.
That's so interesting. I did not know that. That's genius. That is interesting. Have you seen the people that, you know, you have been clients for a while, you know their spending history. Have you seen them kind of lower their price point a little bit? So someone that might come in the past and say, you know, I'm looking for a bracelet for my wife. I'm looking for earrings. I got a budget of 25 grand, 30 grand, whatever it is. Is that same person now coming in and saying, well, I still want to get this for my wife, but now I only want to pay 15 or 20 grand. Or again, in your clientele, that upper, you know, 5-10%, has that really not happened?
I think there's always people that's going to happen to, but our customer base is very diverse and we're capturing new clientele frequently. So while we might have a client that's, you know, been a client for 10, 15 years that normally spends $10,000 every year, might have an off year and come in for a lower priced item. You know, we also get the guy who comes in and he wants to spend $1 million on a diamond ring for his wife. So it's, you know, it balances it out.
I want to talk to that guy and ask him what's going on with that. Wow.
Yeah, right.
Wow. No, seriously. Your watch kind of division, what you've grown mm-hmm. with the specialty that you have with both new and used watches. I know that was a passion of yours. So I'm looking at another headline here, just came a week ago. Watches of Switzerland, who I think is one of the biggest international luxury watch.
Yeah, the CEO is a good friend of mine.
Oh, wonderful. Then you can show mm-hmm. him this when we're done.
There you go.
Okay. There you go. The headline for what I'm reading here is Watches of Switzerland posts dip in sales following slowdown in luxury retail spending. And not only did they have a slowdown, but they're also projecting at least through the end of the year that things are not going to increase. They may not get any worse from here or more of a slowdown. They're not really predicting a pickup for the rest of this year. And he said the exact same thing that you said a few minutes ago, and I'm going to quote this. After a post-pandemic splurge that fueled sales growth for the luxury sector, consumers have started pulling back on spending. I mean, that's exactly what you had said. But yet, here you are, and you're expanding again. You know, as I talked about at the top of this, you're expanding, you're hiring more. So obviously, you see
they have a different model from us a little bit. Okay. And you know, what they do is, I think 70%, and this is public information, I might be misquoting this, so you could check me on it, but maybe it's 50 or 60% of their sales come from Rolex only. Okay. So they're very dependent on that one brand. What happened with Rolex is last year, they kind of anticipated this drop in the economy. And most of our brands work on an allocation. So before, Rolex was allocating them much higher. So Rolex allocates units to their dealers, not dollars. Okay. So if you were a Rolex dealer, they'd say, okay, Scott, in your market and this and that, you're going to get 100 units. So maybe in 22, the units that you got, the 100 units, were valued at $10 million. But in 23, you get your same 100 units, but now they're valued at $7 million. So your company just lost 30% on the Rolex sales.
Sure.
You're going to sell them, but you got more stainless steel pieces, you got less gold pieces, and you know, you're not in control of your destiny as much as we're able to be with product like pre-owned watches and jewelry, where we have no restrictions. We can kind of do what we want to do in the market.
That's very interesting, and I know they're definitely international, but I just thought that was so on point to what is going on here. And again, it just, you know, I don't want to say it defies logic, but it just speaks to your and Rada's business development, business acumen, how you can just keep growing and growing and growing. I mean, it's actually mind blowing. And speaking of your wife, Rada, I know she's very involved with this. Can you explain a little bit what Team Berdine Charity is?
Yeah. So about 5 years ago, we decided that we really want to focus on giving back local. We have, you know, clients who have wonderful causes. Some are more local and some are national. And we really wanted to make an impact. You know, we realized how important that is, actually, from the local charity that you founded, that we've been a part of for a long time, and how impactful that is on the local community. And, you know, the satisfaction that we derive from that, rather than writing a check to the American Cancer Society, which is obviously a fantastic cause, or, you know, PAWS, or all these huge charities. We thought that we could do more being impactful locally. And we wanted to give back to the community that created us. So we started Team Berdine. And what that is we designed a line of jewelry where everything is under $2,000, between $500 and $2,000. And we give back 100% of the gross profits to our Team Berdine charity.
And just for everybody listening here, I know that that's not just an attention grabber. I know that's not just a headline for them, because I've experienced that personally, as you just talked about, Matt, with your support of my charitable foundation over the years. I can't even believe how generous you guys have been. So That's amazing. And again, that just, you know, that goes to who you are, who Rada is, and really what your parents started building was it all 40 plus years ago, right? And it's amazing. And speaking of your parents, they're down in Arizona. Is that?
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Chilling down in Carefree, Arizona.
Unreal. Unreal. Yeah. Good for them. Good for them.
Yeah, for sure.
So where can people find you? I know physically right now you're in your new Oak Street store down in downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
Where can people find Berdine's and what can they expect?
So Berdine's.com is a good representation of our jewelry and our watches at Buffalo Grove, which is our flagship location in the suburbs. We have a tremendous selection of jewelry, new watches, and pre-owned watches. This new store we just opened on Oak Street is an extension of what Buffalo Grove is, just even a little bit larger and more luxe. So this is a 13,000 square foot store that covers two levels. We have 4,000 square feet of pre-owned watches here, and it's more of an experiential location. So you'll have to come and see what that's all about. And then we have boutiques. So we're one of the only independent owners of brand boutiques. So we own Vacheron Constantin on Michigan Avenue, Panerai, IWC, Roger Dubuis, Piaget, Jaeger LeCoultre. And then we have a small boutique inside Gold Coast Bentley, which in Chicago, it's the largest Bentley dealership. It's actually one of the largest dealerships in the United States, but they also do Lamborghini, Bugatti.
I was actually going to mention them when you were talking about this store, because I was going to say that sounds very similar to the experience you would get at Gold Coast Bentley. I didn't even know you had were inside of there. That's unreal.
Yeah. So that's been a cool location. Now, the idea for us is we cast this net, and I think we've always known what to do with clients once we get them. You know, so the idea is that we have this broad net, we capture clients, we bring them into our network, and we take care of them. You know, we just make sure that they're getting a great experience, that we're being fair, because we understand that, you know, you make money on a relationship, you don't make money on a transaction. And that's something that's always been important to me.
Yeah, and I would imagine that a very high percentage of your clients are repeat over and over and over, not one and done, because of that, because they get treated respectfully. They know it's a fair deal, and they know that you're always going to be there to help them for service. If anything is, you know, they need something fixed. I know that's my experience, and so many people that I know that have, you know, had built a relationship with you over the years. So unbelievable, Matt. I'm just, you know, as a friend and as an outsider, I'm just so proud of the way you have taken this business and just transformed it. And in the face of especially some adversity in the economy right now, what you're doing is just so remarkable. So kudos to you.
Thanks,
and everybody.
Thank you. Thanks for the interview. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your time. We'll see you soon, buddy. The Minds of Markets podcast is an exploration, a deep dive into the minds of some of the best traders and investors in the market. Our goal is to help you, the listener, learn from some of the best out there to improve your knowledge and skill set as a trader or investor. The Minds of Markets podcast should be used for information and entertainment purposes only. The opinions expressed in this podcast are our opinions only, and none of the information contained in this podcast constitutes a recommendation that any particular security, portfolio of security, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any specific person. Trading is risky, and past performance is not a guarantee of future results.